possessions.
Huh?
Be possessions.
No, I think it's when you go, they send it to the credit bureau and they start sending threatening letters into people even after they paid something. You know, like somebody will pay for something and in the 2 years after they paid for it, they got a letter from the company saying that they're going to turn it into attorneys because they didn't pay $4.65 and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
That's how my first contact started with an older person who I did other things for later on. Because he came in so I could read him a letter. It was from a credit agency. And from there started our acquaintance where he needed a lot of things. Like, he needed a lot of help, but he just came in just so I could read the letter, and it was from a credit agency. He was paying for a bill that the workman's comp should have been paying because he was injured on the job. So that started our relationship, and we've got his workman's comp, and then we've got his Social Security, and we've got his state disability hospitalization paid, and just things like that. But all he came in was to have this letter read from the this collection agency, and he was sending a money order to them. Mm-hmm. And he had been paying little by little.
Mm-hmm. Any of the others? Any of the rest of you?
I just want to say something, but I don't know if it fits here. You know, like people who do their chopping, their regular chopping, on Saturdays. You know, like I think if it would be a way, I mean, how to educate, the people, on doing. They're choppy, A sister mentioned one thing one time. You went back said something, and it's very true, If you're going to do your choppy, you buy your groceries in any day, and you go, when you're very hungry.
You go what?
You go do your choppy, when you're hungry yourself, You buy many things that are necessary, that you don't need to, but because you're hungry. And really, might sound, kind of funny, but it's true, because it happened with myself, And I have talked this with other people, and it happened too, But, when they do any specials, they really screw you out, Because mm-hmm. they got one item, pretty cheap, and then they got other items, pretty high, which at the end, it just comes, even. You didn't save any money.
Yeah, they have a few leader items to sort of attract your attention, but all the rest of the stuff is
right.
higher
yeah.
than it is at some other store.
I hope it would be, it would work something, that nature, that
well, there's no reason that, but I don't know what kind of a staff the consumer division will have up in under Brown. He may expand that off. Have you heard anything about it at all, Ann?
No, I haven't.
Because I know that's one of the things that he was very interested in before he, got to be governor. And they've had some kind of an office up there, but I don't think they've had much staff under the governor, under Reagan.
One other thing,
Fred, is that... So in other words, if they do have staff, they do expand the services of that office. They may set up regional offices in various parts of the state, and you could call on those offices to have them and get together with them and have them come and talk to your mm-hmm. weekly meetings
right.
about such things as you're talking about right now and other things that, they've got all kinds of things to talk about.
You go to this... what's the name of this cheap stores, like in Lamont is one for land, and then in Bakerfield there are a couple of stores. What are the name of these stores? Kmart. They sell a lot of cheap stuff, like clothes, and just put them to the washer, and by the time they come out,
no good.
They really, the threat just come,
yeah.
come out of it, and you buy shoes and you only wear it for 2 weeks, and many of our people, instead of going and returning, I said, you're going to have to give me another pair of shoes, yeah. Because these ones are no good, are just tore up,
Yeah.
Well, they just said, okay, I'm not going back to Kmart, and that, they lost, $8 or $10, all depend, what kind of shoes they buy,
Yeah.
And many of the people, are screwed up, that way, because of nobody tell them what they could do, when something like this happened. But many of the people, and you should see, those Kmart are how busy they kept, every single day.
Well, remember how that Kmart used to be down there in East L.A.? You just couldn't get in there. People go there and spend the day. They'd have parties there.
And especially when they say on the speaker, we got a special, for what, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, people just go, man, boom, there, you're like bees.
Yeah.
And that's where, our people,
Well, this is a whole subject of consumer education, and it's a... it's a big project, but there's no reason why we couldn't and shouldn't be doing some of it at the weekly meetings. And I think we I think we can get some help. I'll be willing to bet that he'll expand that office.
And old people are the prime target. All sorts of rackets.
All sorts of what?
Rackets.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry, what?
Rackets.
Oh.
Any other problems that that I didn't mention that that are fairly common or serious in any of your areas? Of course, here and there, I don't know whether any of you have had it, but I know Caesar and I, we were used to run the service centers in the old days in CSO. We'd have people come in very personal problems. Of course, you know, we couldn't handle the fights between husband and wife and all that, but they'd come in, there might be a couple of members of the CSO, and they live right next door to each other. They're having a fight about the boundaries between their houses. We had to go out and be the judge as to who was right, you know, and so forth. And somebody, I remember one time in Visalia, somebody at CSO had stolen an alarm clock from another member of the CSO. And that guy came in, he wanted the service center to do something about his alarm clock, and so we wrote him a letter. We wrote the other guy a letter, you know. Just sort of a subtle threat about what we were going to do if he didn't send that alarm. So he got the alarm clock. Well, I mean, do you have any silly little, well, they're silly to us, but they aren't silly to the people that have. Any have personal problems like that?
Well, they come up with runaway sons. You know, remember Electrico and runaway daughters. And
I'll tell you a really good one that came to our office. A woman who was pregnant and looking for the father, who was a union member. And she wanted me to send a letter to all the offices asking where this guy was, and she had his social security number and everything. Oh. And she went, and it was during the picking in 72, and she went out to the union meeting, which we had out at the camp, and accused a bunch of guys, and it started a rumble out there. I mean, a war. It was awful.
I had a father come to my office, and we were helping his daughter, and he came to the office, and he didn't know how to tell me. It took him a long time. He went round and round, and finally he said, Elena, he said, do you think you could find my illegal son and wife? And I said, what? He said, you couldn't perform those kinds of services. he had his son here as an illegal, and he wanted me to find him a wife so they could get married.
So then he wanted a citizen wife so he could get a citizenship.
Yeah, citizen wife, an American wife. He said, I don't care who she is or what she is. The color's not that important. Now, he's telling me this in Spanish, huh? He says, the color's not that important. Filipina, Mexicana. I guess as long as she's not black, you know, until you bring up the subject. And I sat there with my eyes that big. I said, you know, like, way out. I said, we don't do that.
Well, Paula, who tell me about these agencies that get people together with...
I got one going back.
Huh?
I got to go too. A friend of mine stole his... Well, they eloped, you know, so now I got to go back and catch up with his parents.
Oh, yeah. Who was it was telling me about?
It's a book, I mean, but I don't remember. Doctora Corazon is a book from Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, but he'll got pictures, you know, and they solicited
him. Oh, God.
You can solicit a wife or a husband, you know, you put your picture, but...
Yeah.
If you put your picture, put it when you're ready. You start guys to put it when they're very young.
Yeah, right.
Right. I also had a farmer who was a girl who wasn't married and didn't have any family. And she wouldn't have her baby unless I went to the hospital with her. And, you know, she was threatening me. I thought it was a game, you know. Well, lo and behold, she went into labor and she ended up at my house.
Wow.
And she would not go to Sacramento unless I went with it. So I went with her, and I was there when the baby was delivered, in the delivery room with her, which was exciting.
We had an experience.
That's beyond the call of duty,
almost. Some of the people in the service center, or one the other guy who worked with me, you know, there are two families, and I mean, they're very strong in their union supporters, you know.
Yeah.
And they were living together, and then they separated, you know. Now the one lady was making accusations against the other one, and at the then she came, and then the other lady said, "I mean, I don't." He said, "The other lady, I'm going to take you to court because you know a false accusations are you making to me? And he said, I don't care if you think, if you go to court, you know, I got the union behind me. So another lady came, and she said, I understand that you're backing this lady, she's making a false accusation to me, you know, I don't think you're going to represent her.
Was she a member too?
Yeah.
Both of them.
Both of them are good members. Yeah. They're not, God's members, but they're, God, they're very, very good people, you know.
Yeah.
And Juan told us, well, we don't get involved, you know, in those cases, you know, that's a personal matter, and, you know. I said, I understand. The other lady said, I mean, the union is all the way, you know, behind me, so you take me to court anywhere you want, you know.
I'm protected.
Yeah, I'm protected, yeah.
They got my union armor on.
I find that, too. When people gain confidence in you, they come in for one thing, and you end up helping them with something else, and all of a sudden you're being consular to them, telling you how they feel, and then why they feel this way, and because their husband or personal problem, and most... Everyone
get the couch out and let them lie down there and have
and
a therapy
sudden,
session.
And all of a sudden, you know, that's why I said, I feel like I'm Jesus Christ. So a few people coming in, you know, and I wish I could help. You know, some of the things I help, those things are, but they come in with, you know, a lot of personal problems, and they just want somebody to listen to them. You know?
Yeah.
Right, and I had a guy call me from a camp, from a migrant camp one time. He says, you got to help me. He said, because I just got through beating up my wife and I don't know what to do. I said, come on over, so I'll give you a cup of coffee. I said, oh God. He said, oh, I've got to go someplace, I've got to do something. He said, I just got through beating up my wife.
But you know what, on the serious side, Fred, you know, we get
pretty serious.
On the serious side, you know, let me tell you a really serious problem.
You see the Boston Strangler last night?
No, but let me tell you on the serious side. That is casual. You know, you help the families out, like the migrants when they first get there. You help them out with food and clothing and all that. And then if they have another little really serious problem, if they got confianza, they come back. And I think the heaviest case that I had this summer was a young 17-year-old girl who came in and wanted an abortion. And I had never counseled for an abortion before. And I wasn't prepared for it, really. And I wish, now that, you know, we had had some sort of training way before, you know. Anyway, I had to tell her that we didn't do those things, but I had to listen first to her, you know, all her story, and she cried, and her mother cried. And it took a lot of nerve for them to go in there and tell a stranger, you know, that they needed help, and that the father would kill him if he found out and all that. It was very heavy. So I just directed her to, you know, another agency, and I went with her and I did all the interpreting, and even though I don't agree with it, but I felt it was part of my job. You know.
Well, when you're lucky where you're near a city, say like Sacramento or Stockton or some other place where they have these family counseling services
in
agencies
Davis,
and so on. They do.
I found that there's a lot of, you know, people you can tap to do things this way too. Like when they'll come in, you know, like my husband never lets me go out and I have to stay at home, there's nothing to do, the kids are gone, and there's a lot of women like this just staying at home. And I'm sure that it would probably be okay with their husbands if, you know, it's just women getting out during the day and doing something.
Oh yeah. Sure would. Do any of you, this problem came up last week when we were having a smaller session here with the directors, and they brought up the fact that in some offices they don't have any privacy so that they can talk, but like when you were talking to this woman about the abortion, do you have any place where you can go away from the rest of the people that are waiting so that...
Well, what I did was... Like, I went outside, you know, because to begin with, our office was down in a basement. And, you know, it was too small. It was just too many of us, you know. And secondly, you know, like, it hit me so hard, you know, like I said, I had never counseled for an abortion before. And mostly I just listened because they just...
No, but I mean, do you have a place? You don't have a place
no,
there?
No.
Do any of you have any place where you can... You don't have. It's all too small.
We got places, but we don't got a real place.
Yeah.
You don't have what?
Down in Delano, you know how the rooms are divided up?
Yeah.
Well, we have rooms, but there's no roof on the room. You can hear everything that goes on all over the office. You know, you get a little bit of privacy because, you know, you can close the door, but if you talk about the whisper,
the voices belong to
you. Right, you know, then everybody can hear what everybody else is saying.
Well, at least you're, better off than Lamont, because in Lamont, the clients help you with the case.
They're educating you.
You know, what's going on, and you know, oh, the name, yeah, I know the name, you know, they help you with the case, because it's just open.
They have a problem with that.
Of course, you've got room there, all you need is partitions.
It's a, like a little four-room house. It used to be a house. And we have a room like we're doing the unemployment now. We're doing it all in two front rooms.
Yeah.
But if someone comes in that we know it's going to be something like disability, workers' comp, or anything else personal, well, we just take them to the next room, and I just go in there with them.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very important to do everything you can to have some privacy, because otherwise a lot of people get pretty, you know, discouraged when they come down there and find out they have to talk in front of, bring out all of their inside stuff in front of a lot of people.
And not only that, but many people might not come at all, you know.
That's what I mean. They get discouraged.
Yeah. You've got the privacy, don't you, Pat?
The SEM office, no, we don't. At one time we had a partition, you know, in between, but even though we had that partition, it was still very difficult because people were coming in and out. And as far as privacy, concerning you, it's just like, you know, get out into the on Permanent Street.
Have the partitions anymore?
We don't.
Partition wasn't doing anything.
Yeah, even though we have partition, it wasn't helping us out. What I do is, if it needs to, you know, like if I need to have some privacy, I just invite them to like take a walk or, you know, go have some coffee and discuss the problem.
Yeah. We used to have partition system there in the Lamont office, and then on the night that we won the election against DeGiorgio, one of the organizers knocked another organizer through the partition.
Through the partition.
Like a lot of times,
Lamont
problems come from the partition, and that's why people come in there. That they have, and you think, well, maybe I'm going to help them with food stamps, or I'm going to help them with welfare or something. But then after they start telling you their personal story, the wife's not immigrated, she's just, you know, he just brought her over here, and so you can't bring light to that. And they have a lot of these, we have a lot of these cases in that area, so close to the border, and some of the children not immigrated, and so we just kind of.
Well, what about that new thing that was in the paper about 2 months ago about how welfare is not going to check and see if people are here illegally?
They are.
Anymore.
They're going to, they'll give you assistance, but they'll report to the immigration, and until the immigration picks you up, they'll give you assistance during your time.
Don't worry about that.
Hey, are you going to discuss in this conference about how to learn how to do all these things and how to get people doing it for you? Or how to, you know, and how to get people to do things back for you, because that's like the biggest problem I have is that I haven't learned how to make people do lot of stuff for me. And so, like, I could take all day on one food stamp, and then that slob doesn't even do nothing for the union. The person, you know.
No, we are. We're going to.
It's like I did that for one guy. He spent 3 days getting relief and welfare and food stamps and everything for him and his brother. Then I asked him if he would sell some tickets for something we were doing, he said he didn't have time.
Oh, sure.
You run into that.
Well, Caesar tells a story in illustrating this thing of the old days when he was organizing out in Hanford, CSO out there. And one night he was driving along on the way to Hanford, and there was a guy broken down on the side of the road. It was after dark, and so the guy flagged him down, and he had to get, he was out of gas. So Caesar took him in and got the gas for him, brought him back, clear back. I don't know, he had to go about, you know, 15, 20 miles out of the way, I've forgotten. And so the guy wanted to pay him for his services, you know, and Caesar was, you know, very magnanimous and so forth, and he thought he was going to get him on something else. So he said, oh, no, that's okay. He said, but give me your address. He lived in Hanford, and Caesar told him about a little bit about CSO and that he'd be by to see him. So he did, he had another idea in mind about what he was going to do, but Caesar got caught up in something else for, another week or two, and when he finally got around to calling on this guy, well, the guy was too busy. He got cooled off. Caesar didn't grab him while he was hot, you know, and he realized that, well, there were certain things that he couldn't do, right, you know, midnight out in the, on that highway, but to get him to start helping right that night. But the next day, you know, while he was still hot, while he was still felt some obligation and so on for the services that Caesar and the CSO had given him that night, he should have grabbed him right then. Well, that, the moral of that story is don't let any time go by, and just make it very, very clear before you give the services what you expect, what's expected of them. Well, we'll get into a long discussion about that, but that's the real business about it, and I already told the others about it, and you've heard it too, about Indio Comido, Indio Ido. You know, that's the Nando Palma Vana Ver Solo Cuando Tiene Tunas, and that's the only time a lot of them come around, you know.
We are going to learn how to train other people. It's like, there's people at our office that I know can do it, but it's just a matter of my taking out a whole lot of time sitting there with them and telling them.
Well, yeah, we'll be getting into that. And the best way that I ever found to do it was was to have them just sit there while I was doing it and
explain. Fred, doesn't it generally take, in order to deal with, something like that, you almost have to deal with working and building that kind of relationship with that person. And, I kind of sense that, follow-up is very important.
Pardon?
I say follow-up is very important, even though a guy says, well, I'm not busy, generally, if you always go back, and visit, and just say, how are you doing, there's always another problem.
Oh, sure.
You just...
And another chance to make to cement the friendship.
Because people are hustlers too. They try to hustle you too. As much as you try to hustle too.
Sure.
And anybody that tries to hustle a hustler, man.
Yeah.
It can become a pretty game, a pretty big game.
Right.
But after that, it's kind of like a relationship.
No, there are just things that we've got to start, ideas that we have to keep in front of our heads all the time in the service center, or else. And not just in the service center, but particularly in there, because there's where we're actually coming right out and investing time in people. And we can't get them to invest time back and energy and work and so forth. Well, we're just going to be, like you said, spending all our time on this one-way street. And it isn't a one-way street, it's a two-way street. Well, we'll get back to that. Any other problems that... our common suit, when we go into the personal visit in a little while, each one of you should have in mind certain problems, certain goodies that the service center or the union can offer to people. So you should be thinking about, naturally you don't want to have a whole list of these problems, just read them all off, hoping that that person you're talking to or those people you're talking to at the house meeting are going to fall into various slots along the way, because you're doing it too fast, and you're trying to cover too much territory by listing them all. I'll get to that in a minute. But if you could pick out maybe three or four little examples. And tell a little story, maybe just three, and tell a story about, like you've been telling right now, about this woman came in and she wanted this, or this man came in and she wanted this, and we did this, and then so forth, Make a little story of it, because that makes it more colorful and people are listening. Whereas if you just say, we help on workman's compensation, state disability insurance, and blah, 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 they aren't listening. Then, in addition to that, For those of you that came in today, yesterday I passed this around. This is an old CSO leaflet that Caesar and I used to use in connection with the service centers for the CSO. And we would pass these out all door to door through the neighborhoods and at all our meetings and so forth. It's a list of the services that the service center people offered. But it's told in a little different way. It doesn't say disability or compensation or something, but it explains it a little bit differently. Like, are you too old to work, or too sick, or too disabled? Have you been tricked by a dishonest guy that goes from house to house? Are you unable to get your driver's license because you can't read English or whatever, you know? And then it offers a long list of the various kinds of service that are available there, in addition to the little come on there at the beginning. And it seems to me that each office ought to, somebody from each office can get together with Ann, and they can draw up such a leaflet so that each office can have a sort of a uniform leaflet, you know, so that each office can have the benefit of the combined information of all the other offices, and have those leaflets on hand, both to pass out at the office, to pass out at the house meetings, to pass out at the door, get the people that you are helping to do some work for you by going from house to house and passing out these leaflets from house to house, while they're also passing out some information about Gallo wine and so forth. So that, you know, they'd be killing two birds with one stone, and quite a few of them that aren't, especially the ones that aren't working, and particularly the old timers, probably would, as I said yesterday, enjoy doing that and talking to the people as they go. It won't be just a matter of, you know, putting it in the mailbox or under the door or leaving it behind the screen or whatever, but of trying to talk to as many people as possible about the service center and probably how they themselves got helped, you know. Nothing better than a personal experience. Do you think that you might be able to begin work on that pretty quickly? Does anybody have such leaflets right now?
We don't have with us. I mean, I have some at the office. We just made one. When we first opened one, we made one out to tell everybody that the service center was opening, which was in the end of April, September.
Uh-huh.
And then we made a second one that to tell people that, you know, the first one didn't say the services, it just said it was a service center and what it was for, and to come to visit our office and mm-hmm. fill information. Mm-hmm. Because we weren't really sure what type of services they were going to need right there in that area. As we started finding out what we were going to have to do for the people and what people needed done, then we made another leaflet, and it told the services that, you know, but we didn't say workman's comp and disability. We said, you know, if you're ill and you're not working, or if you are, or we're hurt on the job, and
right.
you know, come to our office.
Same lines as that.
Yeah, like that. And so we kind of gave them a list of things that we knew we could help them with, because we didn't want to make any promises, and then they came and then, mm-hmm. you know, couldn't do something more. So then people start coming, if you have any complaints on your job.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other day for the unemployment, we made another leaflet that, you know, told about this. If you're unemployed and if you made $750 last year, come to our office and mm-hmm. we'll inform you,
yeah.
and so forth. Then we gave general information what they needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, in in every area, as far as I know, it'll have to be in at least two languages. See, that's got Spanish on the back. The same information on the other side of it is in Spanish. And but, you know, we have other people. We have the Portuguese, we have the Arabs, you know, and we don't want to forget about the Arabs. I don't know that we've ever gotten. Have you ever gotten a leaflet out of this kind for the Arabs?
We translate that they translate one for us that from English to Arabic.
We've got
Arabic.
Well, it's very important because, what is it, 7,000 Arabs out in the fields around here? We don't want to leave them out.
The boycotters give us help on doing the leaflets because they have access and they're close to an area. So we write it up and then we give it to them and they give it to us the next day.
We have quite a few Colombians.
You have what?
Quite a few Arabs.
Where?
We do too much in the
lane. And do you have somebody, do they bring an interpreter along with them?
Well, we called one of the guys, but then we found one that has a real good education and he comes along.
Yeah, well.
We're learning some.
Yeah. Kifalak. But you can.
Kifalak.
Yeah, Kifalak. you can probably get some help from some of these people in preparing a leaflet. Once you've gotten it in English and Spanish, why use the same thing in the other languages? Well, I think unless you have some more questions about these,
No.
Oh. I want to get on then to, well, sort of material for to help you with your preparation of a personal visit. And you all know what a personal visit is, but for the newcomers, a personal visit. See, last night, the last thing we did was to have everybody make a phone call to the people, to the person that they were going to go see, and persuade to hold a house meeting. But all they did over the phone was just to get permission to come over and talk to them. They didn't go into it at all over the phone. They just got on the phone, got the person, told them who they were, you know, the introduction, and then said that we've got a very exciting new program or a new organization or a new strategy or something. I'd like to come out as soon as possible and talk to you about it, tell you about it. And then try and line them up right then so that you can go out and talk to them, just one at a time. And what you really are doing, though, is not just going out there and talk. You are going to talk to them about this new strategy or this new organization, but the main thing you're going to talk to them about is holding the house meeting. But you don't want to get into that over the phone. That's sort of boring over the phone. People don't like to talk about house meetings over the phone because that means work, you know. So when you're getting ready to put somebody to work, you want to be right there in front of them, talking to them, watching their eyes, not letting them squeeze around and tell you how busy they are and so forth, which is easier for them to do over the phone. So that's what we did last night. Everybody telephoned everybody else and lined up these personal visits among people that they know. Now all of you, and I'm talking about all you new people that are here for the first time, and all the ones that were here last night said, well, it's not going to be like it is out on the boycott, where the boycott organizers don't know the people. All they know is that they're sympathetic. Well, here you know the people. So when you're calling them probably by their first names, and it's much easier than it's going to be than it is out on the boycott, because you know the people personally. So that's what they finished up with last night with the telephone conversation. Were we doing that, Aggie, when you, we did that before you left L.A., didn't we?
Sure.
Yeah. First I want to, in getting ready for the personal visit, we also talked last night that we should prepare a statement and then an outline from the statement about what it is that we're going to tell that person. We aren't going to go over there and talk about the puppies out there in the kitchen like somebody I know did when they held their first house meeting. Remember the puppy story that you told me down there in L.A. when I first went down there? The first house meeting you held, and I went over there and she had some puppies, and I talked about my puppies and she talked about her puppies.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Love it. That fuzzy dog.
Yeah.
That was the day they were burning down the house of the SLA.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I remember that.
Standing
there
talking about puppy dogs.
Yeah, puppy dogs. Well.
That lady's become a real supporter, though.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Well, you took something that
you
liked.
Yeah. The way, this is in general, the way I would approach it, and this is, as I mentioned last night, it's going to be a little different from the way we approach it out in the boycott. But when we get over to the house of the person that we're going to talk to and wind up persuading that person to hold a house meeting. And this is for the people that are in charge of the field offices. I'm talking especially to you right now, not to the people who are in charge of the service center. I'll get to that next through this. But you've already talked to him on the phone, and so now you're over to the house. And you let them, you tell them that, well, as I mentioned over the phone, I want to talk to you about the new strategy that the union is going into by way of getting at more and more people, expanding the union program out to the ranches where the workers are, both the legals and the illegals. I've already cleared the illegal situation with Caesar. It's okay. He wants us to go ahead like gangbusters on the illegals.
What does that mean?
Huh? That means to organize it. I told him about your problem in particular, and he said, regardless, we're going to go ahead. He said, we got to do the best we can.
Yeah, but somebody's got to, you know,
I know.
Tell me how the hell we're going to do it.
Yeah, well.
You know, that's the problem. I can do it. Mm-hmm. I can change strategies, but somebody can tell me, you know, how I'm going to get the people to change.
Yeah, well, but you mean the people, you mean the local people.
Right.
You mean the local people.
The
ones
members.
That, huh?
The members.
Yeah.
Does this even include offering them jobs?
Pardon?
Everything.
I didn't hear that.
That includes offering them jobs?
Yeah, what Caesar said we've got to insist on in dealing with the illegals is that we'll be very, very happy to help them provided they don't continue breaking the strike. In other words, they've got to leave their job and go and work someplace else. Where that's not under strike. Well, not maybe you're not going to get very many of them that way, but well, that's
what if they join the strike, Tim?
Huh?
What if they join the strike?
Well, they have.
Oh, if they join the strike, that's fine.
That's not what that one had. Stop them. Half of them were illegal aliens.
But you see what he means? So it isn't. It isn't going to. It doesn't seem to me like it's going to be any mob scene as far as getting the illegals involved. It's probably going to be a fairly slow process in certain areas, and for instance Fresno especially. In other words, if you are talking to them about the goodies at the service center, helping them get immigrated into this country and on and on and on, all about the other goodies that they need, at the same time you're telling them, but of course we aren't going to be able to help you as long as you're breaking our strikes. You're going to have to get a job at some other ranch and where that isn't on strike. And as I understand it, there are a lot of ranches around the Fresno area, and a lot of them aren't on strike. Well, maybe they don't need help either, I don't know. But in any case, that was what he said.
What do you do in the case of the petitions? What do you do in the case of the petitions that we have?
I don't know anything about them. He didn't say anything about the petitions. What are the petitions? What are the petitions?
We have in San Diego County, we have the unemployed workers are signing petitions because of the fields have all their illegals working to our congressman.
Oh, to get them out of the fields and let you give them and make way for the locals.
Unemployed.
Unemployed locals. Well, he didn't say anything about that. Is any other area doing that? Floating petitions to get the illegals out? Well, you in Fresno, you certainly are.
What's going on?
Well, it's mostly telling the congressman to get the immigration to do something about it.
Right.
About the
right.
Newspaper articles about the illegals.
Yeah. Well, so I got off the track there, but I wanted to let you know.
That's good to hear, though.
Huh?
That's good to hear.
Yeah, I wanted to let you know as soon as possible about, you know, because we have sort of flirted around the edge of that, and he's all.
I get all the lucky breaks every time we have a strike.
Huh?
I get all the lucky breaks every time we have a strike. 90% of them are illegal. Sure. Yeah.
And that's what I needed to be told during the summer when I just to prove my point, I pulled a couple of large work stoppages with illegals.
Yeah.
You know, and no, you can't. You gotta, politics, you gotta go after it.
Yeah. Well, You know, we've this is the history of the movement. We've had to keep switching strategies and so forth all the way through. And sometimes it hurts a lot.
Now those people can help us. Mm-hmm. We never did anything.
So in any case, that we start out. I mean, that's just a little introduction. That is just giving them a taste of what we mean by the strategy. And we are going to begin doing everything we can to organize among the people, both the people who are unemployed now and the people who are working, many of whom are scabs and illegals. And so we need the help of you, Joe. We need your help, Joe. And the very best way that we know how to get at these people in an effective way is to get together with them in small groups. For instance, we need to have you call a few of your friends together right here in your house. Four or five of your friends that are either not working right now or who are working, particularly the ones who are working on the ranches that used to be under contract to us, to the farm workers. So, because that will then give me a chance to come and meet with those people here. And I want to tell those people, especially the ones that haven't been in the United States very long or worked in the United States very long, I want to tell them a little bit about the long struggle of the farm workers in California, going clear back over 100 years. Well, I'm not going to cover the whole 100 years, naturally, Joe, but I want to just give them a little insight into what the whole problem has been here in California for all these years, and then about the way the growers have been screwing the workers all these years, and the little trick or the big trick that they've been playing on them all these years by getting too many people for too few jobs. And then I want to tell them about how this union was organized. I want to tell them about Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta and Manuel Chavez and so forth, and how they first came in and began to get together with the people slowly, lay a firm foundation for the union, and how they were able to get the people themselves to support the union with their own money, which they did, through the burial insurance plan. And how finally they went into the big table grape strike. They began to get contracts for the first time from people like DiGiorgio and Shenley. But finally how they had to go out as a last resort and develop their most powerful weapon of all, which is a secondary boycott. And how people from some farm workers and a lot of students and other people went to cities all over the country and actually won those contracts for the farm workers. Because that's where the contracts were won. It was out in front of chain stores all across the country. And then how we had to do the same thing with the, after we won those contracts, how we had to do the same thing with the lettuce growers, and how we've had to battle the Teamsters all the way through, because they've joined forces with the growers to destroy our union. And that's what happened in 1973, as you know, when we lost all our contracts temporarily to the Teamsters. But now we're beginning to make a lot of headway. We are winning that fight against two of the most powerful forces in the United States. The Teamsters Union, which is the largest union in the world, and the growers, which are one of the most powerful forces in our country. And we are winning this battle by driving down the prices of grapes, by driving down the sales of and lettuce, and by driving down the sales of lettuce and grapes, and also Gallo wine. And I want to tell the people something about the Gallo fight that we're in today. Also, that's the first part. And that takes about 6 minutes. I guess I've talked for about 6 minutes. And Joe, I also want to tell you about the program of services that the union has. Did you know that we could, that farm workers are now entitled to this, what's the name of this new unemployment?
SUA.
SUA. Many, many farm workers don't know anything about this. If they did know about it, it could mean a lot more money in their pockets right now. And we can, we'll help them get it. And you can put it, whatever goodies you want to put in there, huh?
If you were on the boycott at this point, you would go. And also, you know, I want to relay the message to people how they can help us, you know.
Well, I'm coming to that.
Oh, okay.
That's the last thing. But first, I'm giving them a little bait, you know, giving them the sugar-coated pill. And then go ahead and tell them a little stories about some of the people that you have helped to illustrate the point that you're trying to make to get over to them. And you can at that point pass out your leaflets, if you've got your leaflets by then, so that they'll all know what kind of help is available for them and for all farm workers and, well, for everybody out in the rural areas at our service centers.
That's what you mentioned. One thing very important is, you know, when you go to a meeting, you go to a meeting well organized with everything and everything necessary.
That's right.
So you don't just say, oh,
by the way,
I have a leaflet that I was going to give you guys, but I'll bring it to you next week.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
Those things happen, you know. You know, oh, I forgot the Mount Gay, you know. Yeah. Or it hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of ads next time, just wait.
I mean, you know, those things happen.
That's right.
And when you go to a place and you got your, you know, all your stuff together,
right.
I mean, they just, you know, people just catch us, like, the guy knows what he's talking about. You know, he says he's got something, he pulls it out.
Right.
And then even being on time.
Yeah, it's true. Very true. Get them right in the right habits right at the very beginning by observing those habits yourself. And then the last thing is where, you know, you get your hooks into them and explain to them, now, these things are available. This is the way the union has of bringing its services to as many of the people out in this area as possible. But the union needs your help too. So the way that you can help, Joe, as I mentioned at the very beginning, is to call these people together so that I can come and talk to them and explain in detail everything that I've been telling you very quickly right now about the history of the farm workers and the history of the union and the goodies that are available. Well, I want to come and spend more time than I have with some of your friends. Tell them all about it. So, how soon can you hold a house meeting? Don't ask them, will you hold a house meeting? Just assume that they'll be willing to. How soon will you be willing to call a few of your friends that are working on the ranches around here together so I can come and talk to them? Because, oh, I forgot one thing. And I also want to talk to them about the possibility of their taking these cards and getting the workers to sign these, what do they call the cards?
Revocation.
Revocation cards, right. That's another thing that we want to discuss. And we also need the help of people. Those that aren't employed can be a lot of help to us by helping on the boycott. You know, you know what the boycott operations are in the rural areas, and you can explain whether it's going to be whether they can become human billboards or they can become part of delegations to go down and call on the liquor stores, or they can picket the liquor stores, or they can go from house to house with leaflets explaining about the boycott. This is one of the very best ways. A lot of people think that it's only effective if you're in a line in front of a store. But very often, not enough people know that you're doing this, not unless you're doing it all over the map, you know, out there. But by going from house to house, pretty quick everybody finds out about it, because you're talking to people going from house to house and you're passing out leaflets. So you're calling it to the attention of the people, and you don't have to worry about being enjoined by having too many people out, I mean, violating the injunction by having too many people out in front of the store and so on. Another thing, of course, that we always need is money. And we hope that, well, we don't hope, we are urging everybody to make a pledge to give, say, a minimum of $5 a month to the union. Is that too much? Not enough? Oh, you're asking for $5 a week? Oh, well, then it's okay. Asking for $5 a week.
UFWA. Social Security.
Mm-hmm. Of course, when you do this, you know, when you have, this is, I'm not at Joe's house right now, I'm back here again. But when you go into that pledge program, no use in going into it unless you set up the machinery at the same time to follow up on it. If it's going to be a $5 a week, then somebody's got to keep after the people every week to get that five. Or if it's going to be $5 a month, then somebody got to telephone those people or get out copies of Malcriado to them, reminding them about whatever once a month. Or else they're not going to send it in. A lot of them aren't going to send it in anyway. But you can't expect hardly any success with that pledge program unless you follow it up. Now, if you follow it up, you can expect a lot of success. At least that's been our experience in the past. Because you see what you're doing, you're not really saying this, but you're just reminding them it's time for you to, you know, keep your pledge and send that money in, because, and that reminds them, gee, something's liable to come up during the next month, and I'm going to want to go to that service center and get some services, and they're going to find, you know, if I haven't made my pledge, kept up with my pledge, they're going to know it, and they aren't going to be quite so interested maybe in helping me when I go down there, or else they're going to remind me about it and so forth and be a little embarrassing when I go down. So, you know, all these little things, psychological things to make them.
So the soliciting of funds, is that also for the service center?
Yes, sure is. Now, you want, you're not asking for dues. You're just encouraging donations.
We don't discourage them, but we don't really push them.
Well, you should.
Except for gas or phone.
Yeah. Well, you should start pushing them, because if they're working, they've got the money.
Not when we're dealing, though, in the day-to-day service center stuff.
Pardon me?
Because, see, the thing that we've gone on so far is that on day-to-day services, like if
you
meet
hear, can you all hear Polly?
In the meetings, you know, try and get pledges or donations.
Wait a minute, there's a couple of the other meetings, just one meeting at a time.
Donations or whatever, but in general day-to-day work, if you take money from people, other than to pay for a specific thing like telephone or postage or gas or something, then they can get the idea that they're paying for your services.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about that. All I'm talking about is to remind everybody that the program, in order to succeed, must be supported by the people, because we have to get additional people in here to take care of the increased load, and that means doubling or tripling up on all of our supplies, our typewriters, all the rest of the things, that mimeograph machines and so forth that cost money, and you know, the people have got to help pay for their own their own programs.
But we find that when you do something for someone and they're, you know, real grateful, they want to give a donation. What can I do for the union? And if they happen to have gotten some money or something, they want to give you $5 or something, and then we give them a receipt.
Well, but that's the time to explain to them. Now, what we're going to want to make clear to you is that we do not consider this repayment for
but
the work that
like
we did. Because if you went to the Coyote down the street, you would have probably had to pay $100 for the service that we just gave you for nothing. So you're not paying for the service.
No, they realize that maybe you've given them services for a month or two, and all of a sudden they're in a position like they want to do something for you too. Mm-hmm. And if they offer you a dollar or two, well, I mean, you give them a receipt as a donation.
Well, now what you're talking about is a portion of the people. Mm-hmm. It's not certainly a long ways from 100%. You know, some of them are the old Indio-Ida business. And they, you know, they just take and don't get back. You know, they don't give of what they have. And,
The Leno, they got a real good sign. I mean, and I also we got it now in Lamont because I got it from the Leno, which signs the REITs, you know. We don't charge for the services that we give, but any.
We ask that you pay for postage, telephone calls, and gasoline if we have to take you somewhere.
You know, now we got it in Lamont also.
You know, we had that in the CSO for about 10 years. And the CSO was not successful mainly because we just had that and nothing else. Gradually, you know, it didn't pay for itself. And
just had what? The pledge?
No, it just had that kind of a sign. We had that same kind of a sign up in all the CSO service centers, and it didn't begin to keep that office open. So, I mean, to pay for the rent of the office and this in the office and that in the office and all the other things in the office there. So eventually it... It folded up because we didn't have the heart and the sense to realize that. We just thought that everybody's so poor that they just don't have any money and so
that's
we just don't
get
by with it. No, I know it isn't. We found that out.
I found that out the hard way.
Yeah, right.
Using up my own money to take people to the doctor for gas and all that stuff, and I felt so sorry for them. And here they had four or five people in the family working, and here I was with $40 a month for gas, and I was and I felt so bad to ask them to put gas in my car. But you know what? The other time when we came to a meeting, he was mad, but he said something like, you know, you don't have any right to be helping those people. You know, they use you and then they toss you to a side. And that's true, because the only time I see them is when they needed me. That's the only time they come to the office. Some of them, I'm not saying all of them.
No. But there's always a percentage of them that are like that, and we want to cut down on that percentage. And
how many people in Mexico do you see hitchhiking, you know, down the road, man? Everybody pays for that goddamn transportation, man. And you know,
it's
no matter how poor you are there,
yeah.
You know, they pay.
Yeah.
And they make a way how to get on that bus to pay for a transport. You don't see people hitchhiking them. You see Americans hitchhiking, and they look down on them because that's a low thing. You know, we don't hitchhike.
And if we would ask,
they got money.
If we would ask them for donations, you know, or money, our service centers and our union would be in better shape. It's our fault that the union and the service centers. Well, the service center has more money than the union. Because the union doesn't have any money. But it's our fault that we're so down in the dumps financially because we haven't gone back to the people that we've helped for them to help us now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
and we've
far been, concerned, you know,
we went all through this, you see, years and years ago. That's why Caesar is so adamant about this one point, because he learned the hard way too. He found out
that
we shouldn't have been doing it.
Can you put a donation can there in the office in service center?
Well, you can do that, but unless you talk to him about it, Ms. Ibarra, that's none of this other stuff is going to do any good. You know, they see the can, they get so used to seeing the can that they don't even realize the can's there after a while.
It goes as far as, you know, we've seen this where you go to a service center and here comes a farm worker in a brand new camper or a camper. And you jump in your car and you take him in your car and his camper sits out there, you know?
Yeah.
And all along, you know, you could have said, hey, what a nice camper you got, man.
Yeah.
Hey, what? How many gears does it have? Before you know it, we're on our way to the, you know, to the food stand place, you know?
That's right.
Hell, you're going to get him, $250 worth of food stamps. He's got a camper. He's got to put all those kids back there.
Yeah.
He's got a better car than you do. He's got gas in there. You know,
now we follow the same thing that Rojas said a while ago, you know, you know, sometimes you got a hustler, bagging a hustler, you know, and sometimes you got people who are your clients, I mean, who are better hustlers than you are. Because I had this experience sometimes, you know, here comes a guy, I mean, who wants us to give a service, you know, wants us to take him to Bakersfield, you know, but he doesn't have no money. And, you know, he begs and begs and he say this and he say that. Finally, he stopped your heart. Finally, you take him to Bakersfield and then you wait on your way down. I said, hey, man, what's the stuff by the liquor stores and we pick up six pack, you know?
Oh.
That guy had money, you know, and he hustled, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that
he wants to offer you a drink.
Yeah. Sure, I mean, you know, I have had that experience, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there are sometimes, and we have to admit that sometimes the fine people, I mean, were better hustler than you, you know.
Yeah, but the overall thing that we have to keep in mind all the time is that the sooner we can persuade people in various ways, whatever way is best for you, as long as it's effective, to give of the little bit that they have, you see, to the cause, it's the sooner they're going to be involved in the cause itself. Because they've given part of themselves to it, you know, and they haven't just taken from it. Because it, some of them are very grateful and so forth, and they'll go ahead and help out. And but I'm talking about the ones that aren't. I'm talking about the ones that have to be persuaded to give of themselves. After they've been persuaded to do that, well, the victory's won in a lot of cases. They've already given of themselves, and they want to. Then they want to be around. They want to help and so forth because they're a part of it now. They're already into it. They've given themselves to it in some way. So that's what we have to keep in mind. We're just helping them by talking to them about our problem. After they've told us about their problem, then we, as Caesar did the other day. Now we have problems too. We'd like to tell you about our problems. One of our problems is that in order to keep the service center up, we need your help in various ways. And then we tell them, you know. One of the ways is by breaking them in, like you mentioned. We can break some of the people in if they're the right kind of people. And Caesar will be, he wants to talk to all of you about that after we're through. Another way is to give money. And some people can't find it very hard to go over that bridge, you know, because they feel like we're begging. Well, whatever you want to call it, you know, we've got to go over the bridge and get some money from the people to keep the thing going.
You know, a lot of times, Fred, there's like, you know, you run into, you know, farm workers have a lot of skills, you know, like they're musicians or they're artists or they're craftsmen from Mexico, you know. And a lot of times, you know, like even a musician, you know, you say, hey, you're a musician, you should shine the guy off because chances are he has a little group, you can donate some time to some fiesta that's going to be a fundraiser,
right.
You know.
That's right.
Yeah, the guy can help that way.
Yeah. You
know, it's just like a housewife who doesn't want to pick it out in the suburbs, you know. She doesn't want to pick it, but there's other ways that she can help by.
Sure.
They like to talk a lot and be very impressed. They get 2 or 3 people, take them out to the suburbs and have them talk to the manager, talk to him to death, you know.
That's right.
But those are things that people, you know, are measured into what they can do.
Yeah. And
a lot of the farm workers have those kinds of skills.
They do. But too often, we don't find out about them until a lot of time has gone by from the time we first met them, you know. But if we can use that time when we first, well, some of the time when we first meet them, both at these personal visits, then later on at the house meetings, just to talk to them a little bit, either before the meeting if they happen to come early and you're there early, or after you're through with the meeting, you're sitting around having a cup of coffee, and you inquire and you begin to talk, and things begin to come out that you didn't even know any. Well, you find out, for instance, like he said, some of them are musicians, and some of them can do this, and some of them do that, and so you begin to feel your way into them, and they feel their way into you. And that's what this is all about.
I had a guy last year, well, working at the service center. You know, that guy, he can drive no people. He couldn't help no people, you know, and take them to Victorville unless he drives his own car. I had so much headache to that guy, I mean, because he was always over the budget, you know, and I keep telling the guy, you know, to drive with other people, but he didn't know. He never learned how to drive with other people, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like in our area, you know, we got more cooperation from the people now since they cut off the strike benefits than the help, the kind of cooperation that we had before.
Yeah.
Believe me.
Because they're starting to give more than they did before, probably.
Yeah, I know. At the meetings, we said, I mean, we're in hope. Yeah. And at the service center said, I mean, you know, we just couldn't help you. We just don't have no money. We're running with a very low budget. And believe me, the cooperation, I mean, it's just very good. I mean, better than ever before. Yeah. On the picket line, you know, we had more people out on the picket line than what we had, I mean, for a whole year, I mean, that we paid the strike benefits.
Sure. Well, one of the main reasons for all that was that, well, we never got around to organizing those people, you know. At the time, we should have, because most of us were either out on a boycott or over there in the lettuce strike, you know, when we should have been organizing the people under contract. So.
Yeah, and at every meeting, I mean, we mentioned about the we're at home, I mean, we need money. And service center, for the first time last week, I guess, what, they got $70 or $80?
Yeah. Well, you see, when we first started this house meeting campaign out in the cities all across the country in the boycott, we got some resistance from some of the boycotters because they didn't want to stop what they were already doing, like they brought up immediately gate collections, you know. In some areas they have gate collections and so forth. Well, it turned out they could go ahead and still have their gate collections. They don't have them that often anyway. But they just couldn't imagine how, if they devoted most of their time to the house meetings, how they're going to raise money. Well, it's very simple. They got a perfect vehicle right there at the house meeting for raising the money. They probably, some of you have seen the reports from Los Angeles about the amount of money that they're raising at the house meetings down there. Because at every house meeting, as those of you that have been in lately, like Aggie, for instance, and I guess you've been since they started, I don't know, no, I guess you haven't been since they started the house meeting, but at each house meeting, they come away with money. Not just a couple of bucks, but, you know, they come away
in,
with...
In Boston, I used to work with Marcos, and his big thing there was always money, you know?
Yeah.
And house meetings also back, and even back then. And I was averaging a month, like $200, $250, $300 a month donations. And I was only going to house meetings, just getting money, passing the bucket around. I said, I'm sorry, but I'm gonna ask you for this money because we don't have it and we need it. So put what you have or what you can afford in the state.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, and after a while, I was averaging $300 a month. Yeah. And all of us were.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real good way to get money.
One other thing after that, Fred, is very important to recognize, you know, those people, you know, by thanks them with a letter or some way, you know, to recognize, you know, what they give, I mean, what, regardless of the amount. And that's one thing that's very important, you know.
It's and this is especially easy to do if you get them to become to pledge a certain amount every month or every week or whatever. And one of the things you can tell them all, explain a little bit about that pledge, is that it helps the union so much to know what money is going to come in so that they can make plans for the future. If they don't know in advance, you know, what money is going to be available, then they can't plan ahead the various other goodies that they like to be planning, such things as other Akbayani villages and, you know, other things where this money could be spent. But if they know that so many thousands of people have pledged so much a week or so much a month, then they can begin to make a budget, you know, for the future, and it helps everybody.